This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm Josh, joined today by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there.
And Jules Gill.
Hello.
Because we're transforming this fully and officially into the Colin Salmon Appreciation Podcast, as we have more Resident Evil news, this time relating to the movie, so it's kind of relevant. It kind of works. The actor is not involved, but he was at one point involved with the Resident Evil movie project.
He could be back.
I'm genuinely fuming because I sat down here and I read the title of what we were going to talk about in the podcast, and at no point did I think that we were going to talk about Colin Bloody Salmon again. I am sick of hearing about God. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'd go for a pint with him. I'd probably say, "Ooh, you were in a Resident Evil film for a bit."
Well, that's the obvious end point of this entire running joke, I think, to go for a pint with Colin Salmon at some point and make Ben Roy's life.
I've met him. We spoke about his part in the James Bond films and his part in the Resident Evil films.
I don't care.
And also he's going to be in every Resident Evil film from now on.
Right, I tell you what. So to make Ben Roy's wish come true again, why don't you, everyone who's listening, use the hashtag Ben Roy Salmon, and we will get Ben,
and tweet Colin as well at the same time.
Tweet Colin Salmon, and we'll get this going.
If you can make him respond, just be like, "What the hell is going on?"
That reminds me, Josh, we do need to say something before we dive in, which is that we actually do have a hashtag for people to ask us questions so that we can answer them. Because as this podcast is growing, and obviously we've moved off of video to audio, we want to make sure that we're addressing the community and being able to engage with them. So use the hashtag, and I'm going to forget this. I'm going to say
WCGP. What Culture Gaming Podcast.
That makes
it works.
That's perfect. So yeah, send a hashtag with a question to that. We'll check it, and then we'll answer your questions on the next podcast.
Please do, because one of the downsides of being audio only now is that we don't get the comments. We don't get the response as much, and we want to hear what you guys have to say. We want to answer some of the questions. I think it'll be nice, considering we do this three times a week, to have your say and be able to, you know, discuss what the people are listening. Otherwise, it's just us talking to each other and not knowing if anyone's even there.
It's kind of quite good. It's kind of like being a YouTube comment as a threesome, because it's just like we're just shouting into the void with no one actually listening to us.
A little bit. Hope that's not the case. Anyway, what today's topic is on is, are we entering a new golden era of video game movies or video game adaptations? And what spurred this thought is that over the past few weeks, and I guess months, we've had a lot of projects that have been greenlit or announced, including the Resident Evil Netflix show, which is apparently coming, another Silent Hill movie from the director of the original movie, and a Fatal Frame adaptation set in Japan. These were rumored or leaked over the past week or so, and it's got me thinking, maybe after the recent success of, you know, adaptations like The Witcher, which we brushed upon last week, maybe we're finally getting good adaptations of these properties that we all know and love. Maybe Hollywood and streamers are finally taking notice of the potential and the money they've been sitting on for not doing these projects justice.
Well, if you look at the properties that you've just announced, all of them share a horror theme, and horror is extremely marketable, and as Stranger Things and a few other Netflix original shows,
even Castlevania that was on Netflix.
That's very true. Yeah, like there seems to be a real calling for this sort of like pseudo horror, like episodic format. I mean, I can't think potentially. I can't see how the Silent Hill one's going to work outside of just being a movie that is on there. That I don't think that would work as an episodic thing. But the Resident Evil one sets itself up perfectly, because Ben Roy and I did a video recently on The Nemesis Explained.
Yeah.
And we had to dive deep into figuring out like all of the past of Umbrella, all of the different mutations and viruses and people involved in that. And when you actually break down Resident Evil lore, it's surprisingly complex. Like, there's lots of interconnecting things. So if there was time dedicated to telling the story of Raccoon City before, or, well, I was going to say after, but it's definitely very very finite what happens to at the end of Resident Evil 3, but you know what I mean? There could be some
even
real
things like
stuff there.
When you pick up a collectible in Resident Evil 1, like there's a bit of paper that refers to one thing and then that gets fleshed out three games later.
Yeah,
it's just
true.
Like there is so much there, like how the virus came about, like we didn't really find out until 5 the proper origins, like from the sale of the sun in Africa.
Do you know as well, having episodic content actually mitigates the risk of a project, because even though you're spending a lot more time, effort and therefore money in making it, it's TV rather than film, and TV, as we all know, is much cheaper to produce.
Yeah.
And also it means that if you're releasing it, I can't remember, is it Godless this season? They released a kind of, they called it a limited series because they're still shooting and filming the first season. So I think that what happens is that they're actually almost waiting for feedback to adapt and change for the second half.
Yeah.
So there is ways of actually changing the flow of your project midway, even if people aren't resonating with it properly.
I didn't know that. That's almost like a pilot season. You know what I mean? You have this mini run to get your
really
bearings.
Weird way of doing stuff.
The good thing about, like, especially series as well, because if you look at like games are more like books, where there's so much longer form. There's like so much more in there to be like discovered. Like when I remember the rumors forever that was going to get a Walking Dead movie before we got the series.
Oh yeah,
and like, you would think about, yeah, that'd be cool, but how much can you really get into 2.5 hours, 3 hours in a movie? So, whereas games, especially like one game, can take you almost like 5 to 10 hours for some of these games, like especially Resident Evil games, they're not sure unless you do the weird knife run speed runs.
The Walking Dead is the perfect example for how to do a horror series, right? I mean, look
until it sort of burns out.
Well, this thing, interesting, loads of people really dislike the second season of The Walking Dead because it's so located on the farm, and apparently in the books, you're not there, or the graphic novels, you're not there for very long. But what it did was it still managed to take those elements of basically nothing, stretch it out so much, and people still loved it. Like, I know that the viewership and critical reception was down, but they still carried on for, what, 7, 8
It became
seasons?
The biggest TV show in the world for quite a few years.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that was after that, quote, bad season.
I wonder why now, though. I understand maybe for Resident Evil, because obviously we're getting the remake, the announcements of Resident Evil 8 and stuff like that, but 2020, is it just because it's a date that they can slap on and say, like, this is going to be...
I do think it's because of Netflix as a streamer. I think they're, over the past few years, they've doubled down on great, or at least popular, you know, television content. They have some of the biggest shows in the world, even shows like You, which I don't particularly love, or Strange Things.
What's that? I don't know what that is.
That is the stupid, sexy serial killer one. I've never seen it, Jules, but I know it's immensely popular. It's got like 60 million views.
Is that the tagline
like
for a stupid, sexy killer?
It should be, I think. I think that's the point.
They make the joke now where it says, like, You is back on Netflix, because obviously you spell You as well.
Yeah.
But was it because a lot of their big series have kind of wind down, slash come to an end? Like House of Cards has gone in recent years. Orange is the New Black, like one more season left.
Yeah.
Stranger Things is one more season apparently as well.
That's a good point, actually, because Stranger Things and Orange is the New Black represented some amazing original ideas.
Yeah.
But if we're being brutally honest, guys, they have been going on for too long. There needs to be new blood to take over this.
I thought Orange is the New Black was going to finish 2 seasons ago. Oh, so.
I thought it was finished full stop after the second season, because they told the best story that they actually had. I know this isn't part of the podcast, but I was seriously just like, how are you going to top this? And then season 3 came out and it was like, oh, you're not then?
Yeah, yeah.
Sick, okay, cool.
That's, weirdly enough, that's when I stopped watching after 3 and I never got back to it,
and
annoyingly.
The thing is with a Resident Evil series is you could have one series in one game and one series in another, and you don't have to follow specific characters all the way through. So you could, like, it's weird. You could take the Ubisoft model where one team works on, let's say, like series 1, but then the other one's on season 2 with different characters in a different set. And so I don't know if we've ever had something like that before, but I think that could be a good idea for it as well.
The Resident Evil one, it's... If we were stuck in a mansion for the entire first season, I don't know if that would work. But what would work to it is the lead up to it, as in like the development, the sort of coming together of the minds, the betrayal. Imagine like a Game of Thrones style thing of people betraying and trying to manipulate each other, but to do with viruses and like trying to like stop the spread of information going and stuff. Like that could actually be really interesting.
That would be awesome. All we know so far, according to this leak, which was picked up by a Witcher fan site called Redanian Intelligence, is that it's going to be 8 episodes long, each episode 60 Minutes. It's going to start shooting in June in South Africa. But I do think that more expanded approach would work. Like, you could follow a certain character one season, a certain character the next. But then they could have those interweaving plots, almost Game of Thrones-esque, where you are building on this, you know, much larger world, this much larger narrative. And even if, you know, you might not see a character for a while, you know they're there, you know they're impacting the plot and somehow. And I do agree with you, Benroy, that the game series themselves have, like, such rich lore, and that was always an appeal for me as a younger player. Like, I spent so many hours that I've forgotten now on wiki pages of that game, like, looking into the history of the T-virus and stuff. And I think Netflix, again, just echoing what you two have been saying, works as a great platform for allowing creative risks. You don't have to dumb it down for a two-hour mainstream audience. You can, you know, have these exciting episodes of high production values, but then you can't go into the nerdy stuff. You can't go into the origins of, you know, the T-virus and really go into the complexities, the political complexities of the stories.
But the information that you've just given me there, it suddenly makes me think of what is the tone of this project going to be? Because let's face it, and I'm not saying this with hate in my heart, Benroy, but the Resident Evil films are dumb. They are dumb fun, but that is fine for what it is.
I know
because
they're
the
not.
Games are dumb in many places. They're not deep. But maybe this TV show needs to be more serious. Because imagine trying to just stick hundreds and hundreds of zombies on screen for an hour at a time. That's too much. That's asking the audience investment level to be so, like, oh, it's so adrenaline fueled. They'll be numb to it by
You'd
the end of the series.
Definitely build up to it, like with The Walking Dead, where we only got a few and then we got more and more and more sort of thing. But I agree with you. The Resident Evil films are dumb. And when they tried to go serious with two, like the big sort of like, the weird, like, sort of like, not like love triangle between Nemesis and
so
giving him emotions.
Strange.
That's one of the worst ones for that reason. Oh, and the final chapter's crap. I think they relied more on just the, let's just do some really cool moves and see how we can, like, kill zombies. But with this, I feel like it would be more of a slower paced sort of mystery, because if I was going to do season one going after the games, I'd combined RE1 and 0 in the same sort of series.
That would be perfect.
And I would cut between the two things, and also Wesker's subplot and Birkin and Birkin's problems with actual higher-up Umbrella, and maybe even have one scene with the Ashfords just shown, like, something teasing to Veronica sort of thing. But yeah, I think this would have to be a sort of slower-paced sort of series. And when they say Africa, like, are they going? Yeah, are they going to be going all the way back to, like, the 1980s and start that way, or are we going to be cutting to and from and sort of having the lore explained?
You've kind of answered your own question there, because the audiences around the world unanimously are in love with the 80s. There's something about that aesthetic and time that people really resonate with. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if they started out in the 1980s with the people discovering the forgotten temples and all the creatures there. Like, maybe we would see none of the characters that we're familiar with, but getting a group of explorers finding it for the first time, and then bad stuff happening.
The characters we sort of recognize and know and love, and some we hate, are almost distracting.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
As much as I like Resident Evil 5, the film, I forget the name right now.
Retribution.
But when, like...
Nicely done, Josh. Well,
I annoyingly like them as much as this idiot over here.
I watched that film last week.
Maybe we need to do a quiz on the gaming thing of the Resident Evil quiz then, in that case.
I've actually wrote one on whatculture.com.
Oh, check that out.
But they're almost distracting. When you see, like, Leon S. Kennedy on screen, rather than, say, like, a character called One, played by Colin Salmon, who's really good.
God.
But I
how did you manage to get Colin Salmon out of that sentence?
But, yeah, I think if you start off and slowly bring these characters in, like, drips and drabs, maybe show them... I don't want, like, say, a big deep into what they were doing in the Star's office for, like, years before Resident Evil 1 happened, but maybe show a little bit of that, like, say, an episode or two before things actually go down, or maybe have it go down, like, pre-1 and then actually happen in the same episode.
They've got so much potential with this as well. But do we know much more about the Silent Hill stuff?
Well,
the
Silent Hill movie is apparently... it's going to be a movie, for one, Netflix adaptation. Yep. It's going to be directed by Christoph Gans, who directed the first movie and not the abysmal second. So that is promising. He's also going to do the Fatal Frame movie, both going to be horror-tinged. Fatal Frame is going to be set in Japan. They sound like they're going to be separate entities, but still it sort of adds up for me to this kind of the new approach, or at least hopeful new approach by both movie studios and streamers, because we've got big movies to look forward to, like Uncharted, which mm-hmm. I know will be controversial, but mm-hmm. we've got the Mortal Kombat, which the Mortal Kombat movie, which seems to be gaining quite a lot of steam and momentum. The casting for that has been absolutely spot on, in my opinion. I think they're going down the right avenue with it. And we've got Netflix, who have picked up The Division from Ubisoft, yep. which stars Jake Gyllenhaal and Jessica Chastain, and is directed by David Leitch, who did Deadpool 2 and the first John Wick and Atomic Blonde. So it's a good cast. It's a lot of good promise there.
Bizarre. The Division could be good if they actually went like proper like political thriller with it, with the whole actual lean into it, like with two, and like, we're not political, but then you have, oh, the only people with guns survived, and like the money flew and everything like that. There's such great groundwork there for it to be a really interesting thing.
Well, The Division's main plot is that the world's gone to absolute hell in a handbasket, isn't it? And it's just like there's a few ragtag people that
Division 2 blatantly says in the intro, like, oh, only the people with guns were survived the first few
weeks.
So
basically, buy your guns now, NRA approved.
Yeah. Well, I love the setting of the first game. I played the first game for quite a while and I was quite into it.
Played it so much.
I loved it because it's this perpetual Black Friday, you know, the world went to hell on Black Friday because of this plague, and you're sort of stuck in that time zone against this, you know, dystopian mercenary kind of, you know, band of not brothers, what's the other thing?
Rogues,
that's it, a band of rogues. But, and I think that has the potential, like you said, Ben Roy, of like telling, you know, good stories, especially when you've got a good crew attached to it like this does.
And two, just really, I felt like it fell flat a bit, and there was not as much like in there, like it was the same sort of again, but Washington for me wasn't as a compelling setting either.
Does anyone else find it kind of strange that Division like has got these elements of like it's a looter shooter, it's a, you know, squad based sort of thing, but there is the definitive horror element that is completely ignored.
You get
like,
that a bit in the first one,
The whole thing of like a plague that has swept the land and has killed everyone, and the only people that are left are like bloodthirsty bandits. That's actually terrifying.
Yeah.
And yet that's like Last of Us style thing, and yet I never feel when I'm playing that game that those issues are like actually made apparent, especially in the second one. The second one's just kind of like neon guns, like loads of like colours everywhere, and I'm just like, exactly. Okay, alright.
Well, I think that's why the first one resonated more with me, because it felt like I was playing I Am Legend without the zombies, like with the zombies replaced with raiders. And I thought that sort of the isolation when you're around this you know, great depiction of Manhattan, you've got the huge buildings around you, and you just sort of feel like a small cog in the machine kind of trying to survive. But they, like you said, they didn't lean on that very much, which is a weird shame. I think they had some DLC, survival DLC, where you had
pushed a little bit further into that,
but that was not part of the main game.
You know what they should do? I know that they've got a very serious tone and they've got like a very serious cast in there, but the fact that there's Deadpool 2 director in there, potentially theirs could work in some comedy. Have you guys ever seen the TV show Will Forte's Last Man on Earth?
I have,
no.
Actually.
Right. Underrated. Unfortunately, has been cancelled and we'll never get to see it again. But the concept of literally being the last person alive and what you would do with that, and he just spends most of his time just dicking about and he's just being an absolute arse, and it's just amazing. Imagine Jake Gyllenhaal in that situation.
He can be funny. Jake Gyllenhaal.
I know
he can.
Yeah. And imagine him just going like, oh, he's walking around shooting bandits in the day, bowling balls with like mannequins in the evening, so I think just being really weird, it'd be great.
I'd have a bit of that, to be fair. Yeah. You know what, I'd watch Jake Gyllenhaal doing absolutely anything.
Yeah, man,
I think he's such a good actor.
He's really come out of the show.
What I'm actually the most intrigued for is probably Silent Hill.
Yes.
Because I'm going to say my opinion last. What's your opinion on the first film, Jules?
Right, okay, so I actually had my opinion of this film changed fairly recently.
Okay.
For the Better by Ash Millman, who sent me an essay that somebody had written that the entire subtext of that film can be changed completely if you think about it through the terms of the male gaze. And I was like, I was approaching that film from a huge fanboy of the series. So therefore, I liked the visual spectacle of some of it, like the skin ripping off and the nurses being there,
the
was
sound
great.
As well.
Like, the sound design was fantastic, but there was a huge problem that I had in that it didn't fit the character, as in these were another protagonists from the game's manifestations of fear. So why was the central character of the film experiencing them, like Pyramid Head and the sexy nurses? They were nothing to do with her character. They were manifestations of something else.
Yeah.
The director then said in this essay, or the person in the essay quoted them as saying, like, Silent Hill is a collection of memories rather than a single person's thing. So I was like, okay, that explains it. That was never explained in the film. But when you look at it in terms of the male gaze as well, with it all just being about sexual violation and all about, like, oppression and, like, gender, like, inequality.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I was like, actually, this film's good. Like, if you think of it in those terms, but the film just never expressly told you or set itself out to be that. It just looked like it was trying to cash in.
I do think that's why the first one has a lot more to it than the second.
The second one's dire.
It's dire, bad. But I remember at the time, that was actually really anticipated because the director of that movie was saying about how faithful he was going to be to, how faithful they were going to be
and
to the source
material.
Because it was only iconography. It was only, you know, hitting those beats and it had nothing, you know, below the surface. Yeah. It was just, here's some stuff from Silent Hill. He's some gore. Can I cash this paycheck now?
Sean Bean isn't going to die here either.
Yeah.
What? Do you know what I loved about it the most, though, is that there was no trace of Colin Salmon.
Well, don't worry, because he came back again Resident Evil 5.
Oh, my God, stop. But what is your opinion on it, then?
Because the first one, it's weird, because you're going to watch it, because I couldn't watch the first Resident Evil film when it came out all the way through. When that guy gets pulled into the door and gets ripped apart, I as a young boy, I just cried a bit. I was like, no, I can't watch this.
Fair enough.
So when Silent Hill came out, I was like, oh, this is going to ruin me. I can't do this. And I really just enjoy the atmosphere. And like, for me, everything sort of came together. And it did feel like a bit of like the greatest hits of Silent Hill. Obviously, I didn't know how to look deeper into it back when it came out, which was like 2004.
Trust me, that should never be on the impetus of the audience to look deeper into the film. A filmmaker, if they want to be successful, should be able to tell a message without it actually being something that you have to study. That's just my opinion.
I like being scared as well. So for me, especially Pyramid Head, I've always found a bit terrifying. And it wasn't that long after Silent Hill 3, I think. So I remember playing that game like at midnight, just like ruining myself.
But what a great game, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just everything about that film I kind of was into, apart from like how it was a bit smushed together at the end.
I think there has been a sort of, you know, a reappraisal of it over the past few years, because at the time a lot of people didn't like it because of the changes they made to the source material. But now, when you appreciate it on its own merits, you can kind of look back, especially because we've had so many bad video game movies in the interim.
It's like standing alongside The Usual Suspects and that one standing out because the rest of them are actually much worse.
I ironically like Colin Salmon's Resident Evil, like Silent Hill.
You just bumped it up now. It's like the subtitle, Colin Salmon presents Resident Evil.
Look, I regret this so much. It was a throwaway joke at the opening of this video, and now it's going to stick forever.
Give me that chance, and I'm going to be there every Wednesday.
Do we know if this is going to be a... this is a film.
Yes, this is definitely a film.
And the original director's coming back to basically redo it, effectively.
It's unclear. He just said that he's making another Silent Hill, so we don't know whether it's going to be a continuation of what he started, or it's going to be a complete reboot.
I think
it'd
be the same. Also, the whole fires in the Silent Hill sort of like franchise have been stoked with all the rumours of Konami actually... Grinding gears for more games. And, oh, is Kojima coming back now? Are they friends again? Are they holding hands now?
I'm going to put the nail in that coffin straight away, because have you actually ever researched how much money Konami makes off of pachinko machines and the Silent Hill thing? They make absolute bank. There is no way that they would want to take a risk on developing another game when they can make three times the money for zero effort.
Recently relearned that while watching James May, our man in Japan. Went through one of them, and you go in there, like, I don't know if you have any of you have ever seen footage of these pachinko halls, but they're loud. They're louder than
chaotic
small aircrafts.
Yeah.
But it's weird how they, I think they're almost getting back into games for a bit to get more source material for more pachinko machines.
So instead it'll be like they'll introduce a new version of Pyramid Head, like Cube Boy.
Because there's a few Silent Hill pachinko machines, and there's a it's so disheartening seeing Snake here being like sort of redone, but just for pachinko, all those cutscenes. Yeah. You're like, give me the game.
Well, that's sort of it as well. I mean, they must be sitting on a gold mine. They've got all these beloved IPs and they can do something with them, but like you said, they're currently not needing to. I wonder whether they're just sort of trying to future-proof it. They've had a few years of pachinko success and now they're realizing we could probably deal with winning back some fans or putting some games out to let people know we're still here so they want to keep buying and playing.
But it's like when you see your favorite band say that they're going to go on another farewell tour. I'm looking at you, Rolling Stones. And you're basically just like, oh, you're just getting old and sad. Just
falling
stop.
To soup on that same wavelength. They did a goodbye UK tour about 3 years ago and have toured here about three times since. And look, I love a bit of Bowling for Soup, but you can't go around throwing it that it's a goodbye tour.
I'm gonna reality check you right now. Hawthorne Heights are still playing.
They are playing tonight.
That's why I know it. So if you're in the Newcastle area, go see Hawthorne Heights. Be one of 13 people who still remembers them.
Ash Millman will be there. Anyway, we should probably talk about... Go on.
Sorry, we just do one short bit on Fatal Frame?
Absolutely, because I don't actually know much about the franchise. So.
What a series. If you've not had a chance to play it, I totally recommend it to you, because the concept of the game is that it's Japanese horror, very, very traditional Japanese horror with so many creepy, creepy moments, genuinely unsettling, that focuses a lot around the use of cameras. And it's like camera flashes, taking photos of ghosts. Suddenly they'll appear in your screen. Night vision stuff will happen. It's like... It's about using the getting the first person perspective, that horror right up in your face. So if they can use any of those elements for a TV series or a film with that license, it is going to do well.
So I think at the beginning when Fatal Frame was mentioned, I did a bit of a face, but I forgot which game this was. The scary ghost game with the cameras. That's when you rented from Blockbuster. You took back the next day because I was so scared.
It genuinely ruined me as a kid because I was just like, oh, I'm used to playing survival horror games. This is fine. But it was the ways in which they kept on coming up with new ways to scare you with, like, it's just, you know that a ghost is going to appear when you take a photo or you look through the lens of this camera. You know it's going to be something bad, but it's just, how close is it? What's it going to be doing? You're just like, this is awful.
It's one of the times where invisible enemies are actually done right.
Yes, yeah. So imagine that, but spread across a really creepy film or a TV series, a short TV series of people exploring like
found
a home
footage.
Found footage film. They could bring that back because that again needs a kind of resurgence. A horror fan. Wow, how many boxes is that ticking? A traditional Japanese found footage horror film based on a video game IP property from the early 2000s.
Yes, please.
This is literally a hipster's paradise of like, they were things that were once cool that can now be cool again.
It's funny that you mentioned found footage because I'm a sucker for any sort of gimmick like that. I love the inevitability of horror, like you were saying there. You've got a camera, you know there's a ghost in the room, but you've just got to have to go through the process of clicking that button, seeing the flash, getting the photo, and it's just that idea is so inherently scary to me, and I do think it makes a great game, because I've never actually played the original titles, but I've watched people play it, and I've watched essays on it, because I'm fascinated by, you know, the entire concept, the entire structure. I do think it lends itself very brilliantly to Fatal Frame as a series. I do think it actually has had an adaptation before. I think
it has had a movie or two that's come out. There has been some sort of media presence of it, but unfortunately I've not watched either or one of those things, but I will, because it's
I know why. I think I just worked out. I think I've just come up with
Is he answering the question?
Found footage films, I find me specifically find them so like infernal and scary, is because kind of like games, you just, it feels so claustrophobic and you can't stop. You have to, it keeps going forward. Like obviously a film you can look away, But it just feels like you're part of moving it around, especially with the whole camera movements, and you see something in the corner. Mm-hmm. What was that?
It's like the Resident Evil 7 on VR.
Yes.
My dry cleaning bill has shot up. Like the amount of poo stains that need to be washed
still
out.
Still not paid on VR.
All my clothes from that session still in the corner of my room.
That's why they call you Josh Brown.
That's exactly why they call me Josh Brown. Yeah, my dad had like amazing foresight. Ian, you thought one day this is going to become incredibly relevant. There you go. That's your name.
I still haven't done it in VR, but I think if I did, that would ruin me.
It's great stuff, and I hope the next game, whatever that is, go back to our last podcast, is also in VR. I suppose we should wrap this up just by looking at some of the other projects in development, because we've had the bunch of Netflix stuff like The Division, The Witcher, Castlevania. We're also going to get very soon the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
So ready for this to be either amazing or terrible. I will not accept anything
in between.
Happy
Valentine's Day.
I know, man. It's brilliant.
I think this movie, right, we've asked the question, are we entering a new golden age? I think we'll know in about a week's time when that comes out, because if it's good, it's going to join the likes of Detective Pikachu in being, you know, these quite interesting animated adaptations. Mm. And if it's bad, it's going to be confirmation that they don't know what they're doing still somehow.
I watched one of those little teaser clips that they put out.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, I laughed. Mm. I had a little chuckle to myself. It was the bit where Jim Carrey just goes, "I didn't expect that, but then again, I expected the unexpected, so it doesn't count." And I just and I was just like, I realized that I just love Jim Carrey so much that I will follow him into the earth.
Still going like that. How old is he now? 50 something?
Yeah, he's going to have a heart attack. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, but his lifestyle and his kinetic energy is not going to be maintainable for very much longer.
The man has a rubber face, and he has had it for years. Yeah. That's all it works for him, you know? Jim Carrey can continue to be Jim Carrey until, you know, his last days, and I'll be there for it. Like, he is just a very he's a funny man, and that sounds reductive, but I've liked him since I was a kid. I go back to those movies now, I like the stuff he's in now, and I feel like he gets sort of pigeonholed as this sort of, you know, one note sort of actor, but I do think he genuinely has like a lot of range, and it's hard to do comedy well. And give him lots of props, man.
Have you watched I Love You, Philip Morris? I think that's what the title is.
I haven't seen that.
It's amazing. Him and Ewan McGregor play a gay couple who are constantly torn apart, and it's a comedy, but it's just... The acting in it is just phenomenal. It's just really, really good.
Well, he's really great in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind as well.
Of course, And he did Room 23, is that what it's called?
The Number 23. Which, bad movie, but he's pretty good in it.
Yes. Yeah, because that was his first like drama role, effectively, wasn't it? Or one of them.
His first horror-like movie, essentially. I want to end on Ben Wheatley's Tomb Raider 2, because the Tomb Raider movie that came out is getting a sequel. And for me, it was an okay adaptation. I know a lot of people liked
it. A fun romp,
wasn't it?
Unoffensive.
But the appointment of Ben Wheatley, who has made films like Kill List and Sightseers and Free Fire, I think is very interesting, very left field. He wouldn't take this project on, I don't think, unless he could do something interesting with it, which makes me excited. And again, makes me hope that Hollywood and movie producers in general are finally, you know, realizing they've got good material. Mm. They don't just need to make these rote adaptations. They can give it to interesting directors like David Leitch and like Ben Wheatley and actually, you know, make something impressive that satisfies fans and gives us something we didn't know we wanted.
I think that we have films like Joker to thank for that, because it's basically giving a really classic IP to somebody who potentially wouldn't be the person you would think of and letting them do what is effectively an art film and all but name. And I genuinely think that if we can get more films that do that and then just have the elements, the core be the video game adaptation, I think we'll really see some interesting stories being told.
As you just said, elements, I think like the elements of Kill List could really work with a Tomb Raider, especially when you go back to original reboot Tomb Raider, when it was very sort of like dark and scary towards the beginning, a bit claustrophobic. I think that could really work well.
Yeah, I think that grittiness sort of lends itself well to the rebooted Tomb Raider series. Mm-hmm. Like, you can get the sort of supernatural influences in there. You have the dark, you know, horror stuff, like you said, Ben Roy, and then also the grittiness of the action combined with pretty good character work that's already there.
I mean, if I'm honest, out of all of the IPs that we've listed today, I know that some of them are going to be movies, but I want to see the majority of them be done for TV, but not... It's hard to explain why without sounding like, because I want it to look like crap, because I know that the budgets will be considerably lower, but it forces people to be clever about how they shoot certain things.
I mean, The Witcher looks great.
Yeah, The Witcher looks great. Admittedly, it has had a ton of money that has been put into it that does rival like some sort of small feature films, but it's just... I really think that it makes you it forces directors to be clever with their shots. Yeah. If you want to show a giant monster, but you can't have the budget for it, how do you show it? You show the destruction of the scenery or something else.
Like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, there's ways of doing these things that actually make it more impactful.
And I would agree. I think for all the projects we've mentioned here, Netflix, I think, seems to be a nice fit. Not only do the people there seem to understand that there's untapped potential in this market, but like you said, they give them the creative freedom to kind of do what they want. Yeah. They have the longer runtime. They are forced to get creative with it. They're not just trying to dumb it down and make it mass appeal. They have a bunch of episodes. They have to get creative with how they structure the scripts and how they structure the characters. Mm. And with that freedom, hopefully, should come, you know, a balance between pleasing the fans and also breathing life into these projects in a different way, in a different medium, because games, for better or worse, are already kind of like movies in the way that they are structured. And TV, perhaps, lends itself better to do something slightly different, slightly more interesting, slightly more appealing. I think The Witcher is good, even though it's based on, you know,
the books. Yeah.
I think a lot of fans are video game fans, and they seem to have, for the most part, enjoyed it.
And games aren't trying to punch up anymore to films. Like, they've sort of asserted their dominance now, and like, we don't need to be like, oh, but they're just like movies.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Games are games, but I still want to see a bunch of adaptations of them. Yeah. I think they're going to do well. I don't know what you guys think. Oh, sorry, Ben.
I'll just say, as we know, Resident Evil made $1 billion.
Oh, my
but
God.
Should we break new grounds here and quickly ask one question?
Come on,
then.
So Nicholas got to us on Twitter and he said, you're allowed to only play one games console for the rest of time. What one do you choose and why? Love us all.
Thank you, Nicholas.
One games console for the end of all time.
Yeah.
I would choose, for me, it's going to have to be the Super Nintendo Entertainment System, because I have had the most fun with some of the games on there, and with obscure titles or slightly obscure titles like Sunset Riders and The Firemen and the Street Fighter Turbo Edition, Street Fighter 2 Turbo Edition. It's just kind of like, that's my childhood right there. So I probably would say that. Plus, in a weird way, not that I encourage any torrenting of any sites, but if you were to torrent every single SNES game that was ever made from a certain website, Emu Paradise, if you were to go there, then it would only total 1.6 gigabytes.
Reggie Fils, mate, is coming for you now.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
If you were, I own all the copies that I play.
You know what? I think I'd go for the Switch for this, which is mad because I'm not usually a Nintendo person. And I naturally went to the PlayStation 4 because I do think that has a ridiculous amount of games. But the portability of the Switch, man, is something that makes me feel wholesome. And sometimes when it comes to video games, I feel bogged down by systems. And I think for me, the Switch, all of its games give me a nice warm feeling in my tum-tum. And they are not particularly overwhelming. They're not particularly incredibly challenging. They're very diverse, and I think I could play that thing forever. And the games in it, there might be less games than on something like the PlayStation 2 or the PlayStation 4, but I would enjoy every single second of my time with it, if that makes sense.
You pretty expect me to see, like, you know, the Xbox One, because it's got Game Pass, and Phil Spencer is amazing.
Why are we not sponsored by them?
I'm just going to be basic and see the PS4. I mean, come on, man. How many games are coming to the PS4 still? How many games have we got back there? Like, I have memories of, like, Resident Evil 4 on the PS2 and the Wii and stuff.
Yeah. So you're not going backwards. You're going forward.
I'm just
going
to go PS4 because I've got a lot on there. I mean, there are some titles that challenge you in life, like Sekiro, and I'm just glad that's done.
God.
But, yeah, I'm going to say thanks for that, Nicholas, but I'm going to go with PS4.
You know what? It's, like, a really good question, and I think we should probably do a full podcast on it, because there's so many ways you could, like, analyze, you know, what makes the, not the best console, but the most playable console. Whether, is it the games? Is it the way it's, I don't know.
We should all go away, secretly choose a console, our favorite console of all time, then come back with the top 10 games and sell it to the other person.
Let's do that. Yes. I want to know what you guys think down in the comments below. Are you looking forward to the next era of video game movies and adaptations? And which video game console would you play forever and ever and ever? As always, leave us your comments and questions at the hashtag WCPG on Twitter.
WCGP.
Thank you. We've completely messed up.
It.
But yeah, that one, we'll tweet it out, no doubt, and we'll try to get to them on the next episode.
Mm. And we tweet out all the podcasts now, like, just after they've gone up. So if you can't find them on Acast for some reason, just go to our Twitter and you'll find them.
Yeah, they will be there. But as always, I've been Josh. I've been joined by Jules.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Ben Roy.
Goodbye.
And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Colin Salmon.
Stop whispering.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.